Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show today, the porcelain berry vine produces some of the most astoundingly beautiful fruits I've ever seen. It provides food and shelter for wildlife, and it's unsurpassed at erosion control in sensitive ecological areas. So why do some people want to spray it with kerosene? We'll take a good look after lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Alona, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing good. Did I get your name correct?
It's actually Alana, but you can say it however you want.
I will say Alana. And how is Alana?
I'm doing well. I'm down in Oklahoma City.
What can we do for Alana in Oklahoma City?
Well, I'm having some problems with my hydrangeas. They're a little bit droopy, and I just planted them this year in my first little landscaping experiment, and I just really want to save them if at all possible.
Well, droopy kind of can describe hydrangeas. Did they flower for you this year?
Yeah, they did. I got a lot of flowers, but they're just looking a little sad and a little droopy and not happy at all. Yeah.
Okay, so when did you plant them?
I planted them in the spring, probably into March or in April.
Okay, and how much sun are they getting?
They're getting morning sun, and they're in the shade in the afternoon.
Okay, about what time?
Probably 12:30.
It's not ideal. They would probably like a little more sun than that, even in Oklahoma City. Are they mulched?
Barely. I didn't know you weren't supposed to, and so I used the last, like, two bags. It's an inch, maybe, of mulch. But I did mix in cotton burr compost and then some yard waste, I guess, compost from the organic store that I got when I planted them.
Excellent. It is a little high nitrogen, though, as I recall. So it might not be the best for flowering plants like your hydrangeas. The yard waste compost you get from an organic garden center would be fabulous. And what is the mulch? Is it regular wood chips? Is it dyed something?
Yeah, it's just brown wood chip mulch. But I did actually got my soil tested before I planted the hydrangeas, and my pH was 7.1, and the only thing they recommended was, I think they recommended 46.
Oh, my God.
Zero.
Oh, my God.
But I could only find 36.
Oh,
zero,
my
zero.
God. I have no idea why extension services still recommend these high nitrogen fertilizers, again, especially for flowering plants. And again, especially in Oklahoma, your soil tested out nicely close to neutral. That's very good. But as you know, most Oklahoma soils and even some of the water is alkaline. And in a traditionally dry environment like yours, you don't want to put those chemical salts into your soil. So no more of that. And you did too much, which is a typical gardener's, first-time gardener's mistake. Really, what you need to do when you plant new trees or shrubs is dig a wide hole, not a deep one. Make sure the plants aren't buried too deeply. Water them really well after they get installed, if they're not going to get rain. But then leave the bad thing alone. Don't pick at it. Don't keep feeding it or putting mulches down or anything like that. These plants have survived untold millennia without us. Now, I don't know if you have a lot of experience with hydrangeas. They don't look good over the winter. And there is always the tendency to prune them. And with hydrangeas, it's very hard to tell whether they're going to bloom on old wood or new wood. And we're now in the season of no pruning. Any pruning now can stimulate new growth. That growth would be weak over the winter. So just leave them be. And then in the spring, the even harder thing is just leave them be. Wait till they green up. Wait till they form their flower buds. And then you can go in and remove any old branches that are woody and dead, or even lively branches that are getting in the way of the flowers. But don't add anything more to your soil. Water them deeply if we get a drought. If we go like a week without water, these are still new plants. So water them just by letting a hose drip at the base of the plant, literally for a couple of hours in the morning.
Okay, so right now I'm watering them with a soaker hose 30
Great.
Minutes a day. Is that
no.
enough?
Or no, no, no. That's more? Why they're drooping.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the murderer always reveals himself at the end of the phone call. Yeah, you're not letting the roots dry out. Everybody knows that plants need water, but it's even more important for them to dry out between waterings. So your new regimen will be 3 hours when you don't get rain, but only once a week. Let those roots dry out in between. There's probably a little bit of root rot down there. So now I want you to pull all the mulch away until it's no deeper than 1 inch anywhere around the plants. Let them dry out a little bit.
Okay, will do.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Ryan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey there, how are we doing?
Hi, Ryan, I'm doing good. How are you, sir?
Wonderful.
And where is Ryan wonderful?
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Oh, excellent. What can we do for Ryan in Indianapolis?
I grew primarily green beans in all my raised beds over the summer. I've since cut them out, leaving the roots in place, as I've read that that's what you should do. And if looking for a good fall crop who would enjoy all the nitrogen nodules.
Ah, okay. So when you planted your green beans, did you inoculate the seed?
I don't follow.
Okay. Peas and beans and peas are legumes. They have the ability to take nitrogen from the air and use it as plant food. But they're not necessarily born with that ability. It's a symbiotic relationship with a soil bacteria. The roots interact with this soil bacteria, and that allows the leaves of the plants to take some nitrogen out of the air, and the little nodules you either see or don't see on the roots of the plant are the sign that the activation happened, the symbiotic relationship occurred. And a lot of growers, to hedge their bets, will buy what's called an inoculant. This is an organic powder. It's just a concentrated form of that bacterium. And they roll their seeds around it before they plant it. And then they know that that soil-enhancing bacteria is in their soil, and the plants will be able to feed themselves. It's called nitrogen fixing, and that's how nitrogen fixing works. And there's a lot of misconceptions about it. It does not really deposit nitrogen in the soil. The nitrogen is in the tissue of the plants that you removed. So, for instance, all the green beans you ate, they were very nitrogen rich. The vines that you cut out of the ground, they are like manure. They are full of nitrogen, but they have not yet released it to the soil. You still have the vines, or I hope.
No, actually, I fed them to chickens.
Oh, well, that's good. You're going to get the nitrogen back one way or the other. And do you harvest your chicken manure?
I do. It's actually a friend of mine, and yes, I do. Benefit from that.
Okay. So now, for instance, the chickens poop on bedding. The bedding is cleaned out of the coop, and then that gets piled up. And when that looks like rich black soil, that will be a very nitrogen-rich fertilizer. There's really no reason to leave your roots in the soil. They're going to interfere with the rooting of the other crops. So you might want to pull those out. You can leave them in if there's plenty of room to plant your other crops. But in Indianapolis now, are you prepared to do some sort of season extension? Do you have grow tunnels or remake covers or anything to protect the crops when it gets cold?
Not on the majority of the beds.
No, but you do have it on some, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, the classic thing to do, and this is the perfect time of year to do it, is to get a mix of lettuces in a cut-and-come style. And these are leaf lettuces that you plant the seed thickly, like a lawn, and then the entire bed will sprout up. And when you get a mixture, you've got these reds and greens and bronzes. I mean, the bed just looks absolutely beautiful. And then when you want to harvest some of the lettuce, you simply go out literally with a pair of scissors and you cut a lane. You leave a couple of inches of, quote, stalk remaining. You take off the leaf structure on the top. And then those lettuce plants will regrow. The next time you want a salad, you come out and you cut the lane next to it. Next time after that, the lane next to that. By the time you've made one complete cutting of the bed, the first couple of lanes are ready to be cut again. That's called cut and come again. And especially as we're entering the colder part of the year, that's the smart money. You don't have to wait for, quote, heads of lettuce to mature. You can start cutting them as soon as they're 6 inches high, which with the nice warmth and the moisture we have at the end of the season, the plants sprout rapidly, grow rapidly, but then they're always going to taste better when you're harvesting them into October and November because the cool nights will concentrate the sugars.
Excellent. Well, big fan of the show. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Ryan. Those are great questions, man.
Enjoy your day.
Good luck. You too. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Spring City Library just outside of Royersford, PA on Friday evening, September 30th, and at the Huntington Valley Library on Sunday afternoon, October 23rd. I must be well read. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to evict alien plants with diesel fuel and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, the porcelain berry vine produces fruits that are astoundingly beautiful. It provides food and shelter for wildlife and stabilizes riverbanks and stream sides. When we get to the question of the week, we'll talk about why some people want to attack it with diesel fuel. In the meantime, lots of your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Sarah, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike, for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Sarah. How are you?
I am well. Thank you.
And where is Sarah well?
I am calling from Sarasota, Florida.
All right. What can we do for Sarah?
Well, I'm having growing issues with my bird of paradise. And where I lived before, I had two shoulder-high bird of paradise. I did nothing, and they bloomed beautifully. I have since moved, and where I live now, I have five or six bird of paradise. One is about waist high. The others are about knee high or a little bit shorter. And none of them are blooming. They all look green. The leaves are green. The stems look well. And no blooms in 3 years.
Okay. This is one of my favorite plants. I have two birds of paradise because I live in Pennsylvania. They're in gigantic pots. And they come outside in the summer, and they come inside to a special plant room I have for the winter. And I have to brag, they bloomed for me every winter for the past, like, 10 years or so. So I love these plants, and I've seen them in, quote, nature. I'm trying to remember if I saw them when I was in Cuba. I'm not sure I did. But, you know, they're all over the place in Southern California. Now, you said you moved. Did you move from one part of Sarasota or a different part of Florida?
No, one part of the county to where I live now in the city limits of Sarasota.
Okay, so your climate didn't change.
No, not at all.
Now, are they potted or are they in the ground?
They're in the ground, and some of them I've experimented. Some of them are in mulch. The two bigger ones are not. And then one was in direct sunlight, and the other ones have morning sun, get the afternoon, the morning light, and then they get the afternoon sun. The two bigger ones get mostly filtered light, but some afternoon sun. And I've tried various remedies, which I call, some people have told me to try worm casings. I've got others telling me to do commercial fertilizer. I've done potash, but no luck. They have not bloomed in 3 years.
But all the plants are healthy.
As far as I can tell, they look good. Green, and there's no wilting, there's no drooping. I don't see any bugs or any...
Excellent. And what kind of mulch are we talking about?
I have some mulch some compost, and then I have some store-bought mulch.
You know, when I've been down in Florida, I haven't seen this wood trash mulch that much. I've mostly seen things like pine straw. Are you using dyed wood chips?
The cypress mulch, eucalyptus mulch, It just depends on what kind they have on sale.
I would suggest you not buy the cypress mulch. There's a lot of concern that they're harvesting endangered trees to make that mulch. So, and really, it's unnatural. You really don't need it. Are they getting pretty much the same sun exposure they did at the old site?
Yes. For them, like I said, get the morning filtered light, and as of right now, they're getting direct sunlight. And the bigger ones are getting mostly filtered light.
And you haven't hit them with any high nitrogen fertilizers. You've said, quote, potash, which is phosphorus,
yes,
which is the fruiting nutrient. You know, no manures or any, you know, chemical fertilizers,
no,
especially with a high first number. You know, I'm not sure that anything is wrong. How long did you have them at your old site?
Well, no, these plants were here when I got here.
I didn't
bring the old ones with me.
Right. Geez. If you had brought your old plants with you, I'd say they're just suffering transplant shock. But you've also said that these plants are not that tall?
Correct. Like, most of them are just knee high, and the other two are, one is waist high, and the other one's just a little bit shorter
than
that.
Okay, so I think you have lilac syndrome. I think they're just baby plants. It takes a long time for a bird of paradise to flower for the first time, and it can take a long time once they're moved or, you know, they're divided or anything like that. If you have, like, lots of green leaves, the plants look healthy, it sounds like you have a fairly healthy environment, I think you just need tincture of time. And, you know, from your old experience, you know that these plants, when they bloom the best in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
So
they are blooming now, though. I have seen some around in the community that are in full bloom now.
Yeah, but they're bigger than your plants.
Oh, much bigger.
Yeah, see? I mean, that's it. You have an eight-month-old, and you're calling up the children's show asking why he can't play football, you know, so... But I think everything is fine, and hopefully you'll get some flowers this winter. But in years to come, once they achieve size, then they'll put their energy into blooming. I don't think you're doing anything wrong.
All righty. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that advice.
Oh, I love talking about birds. You're going to be happy. Don't worry.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Carrie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, nice to be on, Mike. I just wanted to thank you for doing what you do to help people raise their own grub. It's a wonderful thing. And you've done a good job all the time that I've heard you.
Well, thanks. I started out doing that at Organic Gardening Magazine, and it's been a pleasure to do it for soon be 18 years here on public radio.
You know, I used to get the magazine, and I was one of the first people in the organic directory in this part of the state that raised organic meat, grass-fed meat, out here back in the early 80s.
Excellent, excellent. Where are you, man?
I'm up here by Clarion, and not too far from Cook Forest.
So you're in northwest Pennsylvania?
Yeah, about 100 miles north of Pittsburgh, 100 miles south of the lake.
Okay, what can we do for curry in a very nice part of Pennsylvania?
I have a problem here with field mice, voles. They are eating the roots off my trees.
Oh, yeah, I bet they are. So do you have mulch in your yard?
You know, I do not. I have just a little bit of grass, and mostly I pull it all away, and it's still bare dirt, and they're really killing these trees.
Oh, yeah, no.
Their tunnels all through the garden, asparagus bed, mm-hmm. everywhere.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's two things you can do right away. The first is simple mouse traps, but because we're out in the open and we don't want to harm birds or anything like that. You know, I was in a big box store the other day, and they had a bag of 100 mouse traps, you know, the little old sure. Victor snap traps for $6. And it was like, I want to buy this, you know? So you get a whole bunch of mouse traps, and then you get a big cardboard box. And where you see the worst vole destruction, you bait your mouse traps with some peanut butter. You know, put 20 traps under there. Use a big box. And then just cut little holes in the bottom, like mouse holes, like cartoon mouse holes in the old Disney sure. cartoons or something. So the voles can come and go, but birds can't come down. And I guarantee within, like, 48 hours, you'll have taken down quite a few voles. There are also now really cool electrified mouse traps that do the same thing, where you don't even have to put them under a box. There's only mice can get at them. They're a box that sits on the ground. I think they got 4 AA batteries inside. There's a little baiting pan, and you put some peanut butter on that, and then the machine will give them a shock when they come in, and a light will go from green to red, so you know to dump it out, reset it.
Does it kill them?
Oh, yeah. I apologize to people who think that nothing should be touched outside. But, you know, vermin like mice and rats and voles would gladly take us off the planet in a New York
Absolutely
minute.
Absolutely, they would. They're tough on us.
And then have you tried castor oil?
What do you do with that?
Well, you buy a preparation because it's almost impossible to get the old stinky style of castor oil anymore. But the smell is very repellent to down south gophers and in our region to groundhogs and voles, creatures that live either underground or right under the surface of the soil. It imparts a strong smell to the soil. So it doesn't harm them, but they do go away. They'll go someplace else. It sounds like in your case, there's a lot of room for them to roam. So you can buy castor oil repellents. It'll probably be sold as a mole repellent, but anything that works on moles is going to work on voles as well. So look around. You can buy it as granules that soak into the soil every time it rains, or you can buy it as a liquid that you spray on the areas you want to protect the most, and it will build up a scent in your soil. Keep, especially next spring, after the winter's over, after the snow has melted, that's when new voles are moving in and breeding. And you know, their breeding is impossible. They are the most fecund creatures in North America. The females are fertile at like 6 weeks of age. They have a litter every 6 weeks. It's just astounding how their numbers can build. But if you make your property unwelcome to them in the spring, they may go elsewhere. So you can really cut their numbers by going heavy duty with a castor oil mole and vole repellent early in the spring. You go online, you go to stores, you're going to see a lot of different options. So get the ones that have the highest concentration of castor oil as their active ingredient. They're going to give you the best bang for your buck. In combination with traps, that should be good. And the final thing, because a lot of times I forget to talk about this, but I did it at my local church and it worked great, is especially in a wild area like you are, put up raptor perches. Just cross beams about 6 feet off the ground with a cross beam nailed onto them. And owls will rest there at night. And owls are the biggest predators of voles. And voles are largely nocturnal.
So, we have screech owls. You hear them all the time.
Exactly.
They're getting some of them. I'll tell you, they chew on my tomatoes and my beets, my carrots.
Right. So I'm saying.
They eat a lot of weeds.
Right. I'm saying three things: castor oil, raptor perches, and traps. And that'll knock their numbers down.
I appreciate that.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thank you. Have a good day. Appreciate it. Bye bye now.
1-888-346-9499. Catherine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you so much for making it. Catherine, where are you?
I am in Oriental, North Carolina, an absolutely beautiful area on the Intercoastal.
Yes, I'm very jealous of Carolinians. You know, every once in a while I'll be map questing something and I'll go, oh, that would be a lovely place to live.
Yeah, well, it's really beautiful, but this summer has been so hot and so humid, and we've had extended periods of really dry heat and then extended periods of monsoons.
Yeah.
And the plants don't know what to think. I don't know what to think.
Well, I'll tell you, I keep a calendar, and I just do two things on my wall calendar. I write down when we get rain, how many inches, because I'm always forgetting, and I don't want to be watering. And then I just write down H for if it was a heat wave and just an arrow showing how far. And the month of August, I think I was up to 12 inches of rain.
Wow.
Surrounded by heat waves.
Yeah.
So I've never had a more productive garden. I've never had more massive weeds. I've never had more insects, good and bad. It's just like everything is in the 13th inning. It is out of control.
Yeah, that's the way I'm feeling. I'm just feeling kind of overwhelmed. I have 24 red knockout roses. They border a flagstone path that goes from our house down to our dock.
Down to your dock. We're done. That's it.
Yeah, and it's normally very pretty. My husband built, it's a giant French drain, really, the path that goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And the roses are mounted on the sides. They're about, depending on where you are, 12 to 24 inches higher than the path.
Right.
And the slope down to the dock is about 5 degrees, I would guess. So they have good drainage. And I amended the soil and stuff before we built the mounds and put the roses on.
With
they
what?
Planted about four compost and what do they call it? Soil.
Topsoil, mushroom soil.
It was just top. Yeah, topsoil. Top
right, because you're all sandy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what we did, and that's what the mounds are. And then the mounds are at the top of, or the roses at the top of the mound, and then I have. Creeping flocks
that go down
the bank to the path.
Yeah.
And so that they're all pretty drought-resistant plants, and I've done really well. We've had them in about 7 years now.
What's wrong with them?
Well, they're yellow, and they're dropping their leaves. They don't seem to have any dots or anything on the leaves. I can't see that there's insects or anything. We've had so much rain, I don't know if they're too wet or if they're too dry. I'm afraid to do anything to make it worse. I normally cut them back to about 3 feet high in the spring, just when the new growth is starting.
That's fine.
And then I change the compost. We get wonderful compost from a dump nearby, and I use that around the base of the roses, take the old off, put the new on in the spring, and then they just start blooming, and they're fabulous. I deadhead them as the blooms are spent, and I try and keep them about 4 feet high. And I've had real good luck with them for 7 years, but this year they're looking really straggly. I always thin them out in the middle in the spring, and I can see right through the plants. You know,
so there's good air circulation.
There's good air circulation.
Now, but
am I
correct that they are in full sun?
They are in full sun, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's two or three at the bottom that have a little bit of shade from a tree, but most of it's full sun.
And do they look any different?
Yeah, actually, they do look a little greener.
Yeah,
and a little
leafier. Yeah, I think they're just blasted, Kath. I think it's the same as if somebody had tied you down outside.
Yeah.
In this season, so I think yours are just blasted by the sun. And I fully expect it with your climate. Don't do anything to them now. Don't prune them. Don't encourage any new growth. But as the weather cools, as we get out of this kind of end-of-the-world climate change weather for a little bit, I expect they might even green up this fall.
Okay. I do have soaker hoses that run along the edge of the berm that I made, and I usually, like, once a week will run that for like 30 minutes. That won't hurt the roses, will it?
No, that's not even enough to really influence anything. If you go a week without rain, you can run that soaker hose for several hours once a week.
Okay. I didn't want to get too much water to the roses, but my phlox are not enjoying the heat either.
Yes, but 30 minutes isn't enough for any plant. It's just a cruel tease. When you water,
okay,
you want to water long, deep, and infrequently. If you go into another heat wave, don't be afraid to let that soaker hose run for 2 or 3 hours twice a week.
Okay, I won't be a tease.
All right.
Okay.
All right, we'll be coming down to use the dock real soon, Kath.
You're welcome anytime.
All right.
And thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your help.
My pleasure. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Fredericksburg, Virginia Home and Garden Show on Saturday and Sunday, October 15th and 16th, giving workshops, chatting about compost, and avoiding your toughest garden questions. Hey, at least I'm honest. Hey, time's up. Sorry. Thanks for bringing all those dead plants. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to evict alien plants with diesel fuel and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will talk about the porcelain berry plant, the porcelain berry vine plant, the aggressive alien invader with beautiful fruits that feed birds, shelter wildlife. It prevents erosion in sensitive areas. And you won't believe what some, quote, plant conservation groups want to do to it. We'll give you all the grisly details after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Robert, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I am doing just ducky, Robert. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thanks.
And where is Robert doing well?
I'm down in Putnam County, Georgia.
And what part of Georgia is that?
It's middle of Georgia. I'm about an hour east of Atlanta, an hour south of Athens, an hour north from Macon, an hour from everywhere.
So what can we do for Robert in central Georgia?
I'm managing an education garden for an environmental ed center, and we've been transitioning now. I got the fall line coming in, so I'm growing all these brassicas in my office and waiting to put those out. And I'm kind of contemplating how I'm going to transition this summer garden that I got into a fall garden, and then ultimately, how do I winterize my garden here?
Well, I mean, Robert, to winterize your garden, you'd need winter. I mean, you'd need to, like, move to New England or something, you know.
I know. I'm trying to frost date here. I've been looking up a frost date, so I can put stuff in until November. So I have four different beds. I have a big melon patch right now, and then I have another patch, which is tomatoes with some chard and onions grown in there. Then I have another patch filled with squash vine borers and squash bugs. I've been battling those all summer. I have a bed now, too, that this past spring and summer, that's just been cover crops, and I'm really thinking about putting my brassicas in there. With my fall line here, I'm doing the collards, I'm doing cauliflower and broccoli and Brussels sprouts. I have a planting of garlic, got garlic coming that I want to put in. And then what can I do during the colder months to make sure that these squash bugs and squash vine borers aren't going to come back the next season?
If your squash is shot, I would clean out that bed right away. There's no point in leaving it out there if it's not productive. It is just a breeding ground for insects. If you're in an educational place, I think you need to compost it. I think you need to make a big hot compost pile. Maybe you can find some nice fresh manure down there. Mm-hmm. Mix that with your spent garden crops. Let that sit. That'll destroy all the eggs and any disease that's in there. You know, sooner or later, we get sick of tomatoes. You know, once we get to like the end of September, I would suggest you start pinching off any new flowers that form on your tomato plants and then just harvest what you have, because after that, it's just not worth the money and the trouble. And, you know, we need the pillow. Sleep faster. Come on, we need to turn these beds around. You grow in the giant propane tank alligator watermelons?
No, these are just tinier ones. I think, you know, I had trouble this summer with, I don't know, squirrels or raccoons or birds or something getting into them, but they finally started to leave them alone, and now they're getting bigger,
good.
And I think they're going to get about basketball size.
Okay, good. Yeah, in a patch like that, it could be mice, it could be rats, it could be squirrels, it could be raccoons, it could be almost anything.
Okay.
But that's the same advice. Pull off any new flowers that form, because it takes a long time for a watermelon to go from flower to ripe fruit. So you're just sapping energy from the plant, and you'll redirect the energy to ripening up what you have. And then again, we'll turn that bed over. The squash, like I said, we're getting rid of the squash. There's a plan for the tomatoes. There's a plan for the watermelons. You do what you want with your cover crop. In terms of rotation, I don't think you have to go nuts. The important thing is don't follow tomatoes with tomatoes the following season. You know, make sure next year's tomato bed is a completely different bed, like the one where the squash grew. So make sure your tomato plants move to a different bed every year. Where you live, there's no point in getting the garlic in the ground before Thanksgiving, so you can relax about that. But really, the important rules to follow is if you had a big pest infestation, rotate that bed to a different crop. Make sure you rotate your tomatoes to a different bed every year. And one thing I learned after 10 or 12 years, you eventually have to do that with your garlic as well. You want to be moving it around. But that's also just basic smart gardening. In your environment, as long as you're adding a lot of new compost to the top of the beds all the time, you can grow 24/7 in most of those beds, if not all of them.
All right, Mike, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, good luck, Robert. You take care, man.
You too.
1-888-346-9499. Chris, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I am just ducky today. Chris, how are you, sir?
I am outstanding.
And you are outstanding where?
I am outstanding in Nashville, Tennessee.
Ah, Music City. Excellent, excellent.
Yes.
We love our Nashville listeners.
Sir.
What can I do for Chris in Nashville?
Yes, sir. My wife and I bought our first home about 2 years ago, and on the east side of the house, we have a Japanese maple, and it's located in between two kind of big green bushes, and it's about 2 to 3 feet off of the house. And it's getting, I guess, bigger and bigger and bigger is the best way to describe it, and so we need to obviously transplant it. And I've heard just a lot of nasty rumors that transplanting a Japanese maple is nearly impossible.
Yeah, it's kind of dicey. Okay. But what you're going to do is you're going to choose your shot. You're either going to do this in, quote, the dead of winter, which is not that bad for you, or in the spring.
Right.
Now, whatever issues you're having with it now obviously are going to be somewhat compounded by the move. But then if the move works, they're going to fix themselves. So if the tree leafed out well this spring, does it look healthy now except for those, you know, your self-inflicted wounds and whatever's happening at the top?
It does, yes.
Okay, so here's what you're going to do. You're going to get a tarp. You're going to get like 5 or 6 burly friends, and each with a shovel. And what you're going to do is you're going to start ridiculously far away from the tree, like 2-3 feet away from the trunk of the tree. This is like, I'm guessing it's about a 6-foot tree right now.
It is. Yeah, it's about 5. Yeah. 5
okay. 6. So what you want is for these guys or, you know, whatever, to start putting their shovels in the ground and keep going deep, keep going deep, keep going deep, ridiculously far out, making a big circle as if you were in one of these science fiction movies and you're lifting a city into the air and you got this big, big thing of dirt underneath it. Your ideal situation, which will mean the tree will survive brilliantly, is if when you finally make that complete circle, that giant island, it's going to weigh a couple of 100 pounds, if you see few to no roots. Then if the roots are in this island of soil, the tree doesn't know what's going on. It's like carrying a 2-year-old into the house at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're sound asleep. You can bang their head once or twice. They're not going to wake up. They won't know what happened. So then use your shovels, if you can, to move it onto the tarp. And you pick up the tarp by the edges. You take it to an area where it's going to get sun from all sides, and it's not going to be in a lawn that's treated with herbicides or anything like that. And then you dig a hole that replicates the old hole, but technically, the way most people plant trees, a little higher, perhaps. Don't plant it lower. So you want to drop it into the new hole, and ideally, just fill it in, take the soil you dug from the hole, use it to replace what you dug next to the house. And then no matter what time of year it is, I want you to take a hose and just let it drip, drip, drip at the base of the plant for like 4, 5, 6, 8 hours afterwards. Really saturate the soil. And then, you know, anytime you get a long dry spell after that, treat it like a new tree. Do the same thing. Water, just drip, drip, drip from a hose for a couple of hours. And then when, you know, when the tree is established, or really even immediately after you get it in the ground, get a nice batch of good quality compost, yard waste compost, not composted manure, and mulch the tree properly, which means you don't touch the trunk. You start 6 inches away from the trunk, but then you go out in a big circle and make a 2-inch deep layer of compost. And it'll feed the tree gently, and it'll be your visual reminder not to get close to it. So once that nice layer of compost is there, you shouldn't have weeds. If you do, protect the trunk when you weed whack just temporarily. And then out in the open with the compost mulch, I think the tree should prosper, unless it dies. And then, you know, but it's going to be one or the other.
Okay, great. Awesome. This is great information, and it takes the fear away from transplanting this thing. So I really appreciate it, Mike. Thank you.
Good luck, Chris.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week, which we're going to call weeds. You can't whack the world away. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, get us started by reading this week's almost impossibly frightening question.
I can do that, Mike. Arlene in Silver Spring recently sent you an email from a friend of hers named Nancy. It reads, Look carefully at these photos of porcelain berry vine so that you can identify this awful plant. It showed up here in Montgomery County, Maryland, some years ago and started taking over. The vines you see draped over everything along the beltway are porcelain berry. It produces enormous numbers of lovely little berries that the birds adore, and each one can become a new plant when those birds poop out the seed. She goes on to say, if you see a young plant, pull it right away, because the roots become very strong after the second year and are very hard to get out. It looks much like a grapevine and has tendrils that attach to other plants. They are like wires and hard to remove. If you already have an established plant, you may need to use an herbicide to kill it. She attached a handout from something called the Plant Conservation Alliance that looks like an old Wild West wanted poster, but it says least wanted over a picture of the plant instead. Let's see. Down at the bottom, it recommends spraying the plants with a mixture of chemical herbicides and diesel fuel and kerosene? What?
Yeah, come on. We're going to conserve plants by spraying them with high concentrations of powerful chemical herbicides laced with fuel oil. This is the kind of madness that always seems to result when people start labeling some plants alien invaders. And if the name of your plant-killing group includes the word conservation, you apparently get to spray kerosene in the woods. Yay for us!
Mike, that can't be legal.
Well, it would certainly appear to be a violation of FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. But the group advocating this dangerous practice, the PCA, has a lot of partners in government agencies. They actually call them cooperators. The PCA website also lists a number of botanic gardens as members/cooperators. And you ready? And the Xerces Society.
Xerces? The organization dedicated to protecting pollinators? I guess no person or group is immune to this kill the bad plant madness. So, what message do you want to get across to our listeners today?
First, please don't mix the chemical herbicides Garlon and Roundup with fuel oil and spray it on plants that both the initial emailer and the PCA wanted poster describe as being highly attractive to birds. Or if you're going to do it anyway, please don't pretend that you're conserving anything. Second, and most important, don't think that you or any person or any group can control nature. The plants that surround us are constantly changing as we alter their environment by creating large, quote, disturbed areas like the areas around big highways. All you can achieve when you go into the woods with herbicides and fuel oil is the death of huge numbers of pollinators, birds, amphibians, and massive amounts of erosion. As we pave over more and more areas and our rains become more intense, we need every possible plant root in the ground to help manage that water. Even if those roots belong to a plant that somebody who thinks they have the right to make a list doesn't like. Oh, and in addition to preventing erosion and feeding wildlife, this particular bad plant is also extremely attractive. What do you say, Alexis? I just showed you a picture of it.
Is this yet another escaped ornamental?
Yeah, the speckled berries it produces are astoundingly beautiful, kind of a cross between an Easter candy I remember when I was a child and a robin's egg. In his brilliant book, Wild Urban Plants of the Northeast, the equally brilliant Harvard researcher Peter Del Tredici notes that the porcelain berry vine provides food and shelter for many kinds of wildlife and excellent erosion control. It's known for stabilizing ecologically sensitive areas like the banks of rivers and streams.
So nuking it with hardcore chemicals would attack amphibians both directly and through erosion, and hurt the water quality.
And this specific bad plant would be quickly replaced by a different aggressive vining weed, like the very similar wild grape and wild wisteria. Or, let's say, Virginia creeper or poison ivy. And they're not alien invaders. They're both native plants. again, those roots are doing a massive amount of environmental good just by being in the ground. So if you honestly need to control this or any other plant somewhat, just sever those roots. The above ground growth will turn brown and die, and then you can just pull it out of the trees or whatever. It's no big deal. If it's on your property and you don't want it there, keep cutting it back to the ground for a few seasons, and then spray any new growth with a low to non-toxic herbicide, like the ones whose active ingredient is soap or iron.
But repeated cutting alone will eventually kill it.
Right, except you won't also be killing birds, bees, frogs, and toads. We really need to lose this knee-jerk reaction of spraying plants that appear on some list with the most environmentally damaging chemicals possible. My local township controls our roadside weeds mechanically and always has. It keeps the view clear for drivers, and the roots left behind help mitigate the massive amounts of water that fall during heavy storms. If they were spraying herbicides, our hillsides would just wash away. Well, that sure was some frightening insight into what happens when people other than Santa Claus start making naughty and nice lists, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to vanquish my vines if I don't get out of this studio. So we must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse, teeming towards our garden shore, at garden@whyy.org. And please include your location, especially if you are certain that we don't need it. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares where you are, but where you will find the answers to all those garden questions you were going to ask us. Audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz are buying time on the web. Boo-hoo, we must bid adieu to our indomitable intern, Emma Bixler. Our editor, Al Banks, is still here. Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, keeps turning to me and mumbling, kerosene? Really? I seem to be this planet's last best hope, Mike McGrath, so I'll certainly see you again next week. Sir, put down the sprayer over there, sir. That's right, you, sir. Now just step away. You with the kerosene, keep your hands where I can see them. Say there, has it been hot enough for you now? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll chat with author Ken Drews, who believes that shade is the new sun. Plus, put down those pruners and your fabulous phone calls.